this morning we had a really nice reflection by Ajahn Titipaño, who was talking about essentially illustrating how we can get in touch with peace. And one of the things he did was he recited several words for the description of Nibbana. And there were enough pauses in between that the words kind of settled on the mind before another word began. So for me, the effect of that was quite strong. When we hear words about Nibbana, they can have a sense of something that we have some understanding of. You know, just the word peace. We know what that means to be peaceful. You know, or still. Uncomplicated. These are words that are, they just settle on the mind, and at least for myself, the effect seems quite natural, quite easy. It's a settling sense. And I was reflecting on that throughout the day because when Ajahn Titipaño was speaking, the words really, they felt so strong that there was this sense of, oh, right, there's a question. Why does the mind go out? Why does it move away from that peace, from stillness, from the giving up of craving, relinquishment? And it's not, you know, it's not useful to get into a commentary around, you know, what's wrong with the mind or what's wrong with the way that it tends to go. This is just another expression of discontent. But just to actually identify that enjoyment, happiness that comes from non-complication, from peace, juxtaposed to the mind trying to get what it wants, seeking fulfillment in conditions. And so throughout the day I was trying to notice that, the various complications that were occurring, the mind going out, and how very easy it is to forget that desire for peace, that wholesome desire for peace. And not just a desire, but to see it as something that is safe and a refuge. And call it an island. And so it's, you know, I find it really interesting to think about this because most of us are well versed in some of the Buddhist teachings and perhaps a lot of the teachings of the Buddha, and we've read suttas, and those suttas have perhaps felt in accord with our experience or what we're interested in, or we hear teachers speak about it, or even when we think about the Dhamma for ourselves, it can have a very profound meaning for us. And yet the mind moves into thought world so easily. Moves into typical patterns of blaming and assuming, feeling critical towards oneself or others, wanting things to be a different way, and very easily forgetting that sense of peace. And it's quite amazing because I think most of us who have had even just a glimpse of a moment of peace or calm really do feel that that is secure, and that is something that we wish for ourselves. And so I think it's a very good exploratory experience to look into, you know, what is it that keeps drawing us up, drawing us into getting into trouble, you know, to causing problems for ourselves. And how easy it is for us to move into that. That it can be just like we can think of it like an unskillful muscle that we've developed, and we've learned how to increase and make it very strong, sort of moving the mind into aversion or greed, or just being confused or deluded. And so we're often, for many of us, there's a correction that's trying to be made, as if there are several weak muscles that need to be strengthened. And those are muscles around, like, the Eightfold Path, you know, developing right effort, which can be a very difficult thing to do. Putting effort in the right direction instead of, you know, wrong effort. Effort that brings us unskillful states. I was thinking today, just I've been given the task by Ajahn Kaspo while he's on retreat to water the the garden. And I found that quite enjoyable. But every now and again, there's some sort of snag here or there, something that comes up. And I keep relating to the instructions he gave me when he left. He said, you know, if you're taking care of the landscaping around here and the plants, you know, the plants die, just, it's fine, don't worry about it, we'll just plant some more. And I've been trying to bring that up more and more as a reflection around just having peace around what it is that I'm attending to, especially during that morning chore. But then the mind, it gets, you know, it moves into complication and wanting permanence and wanting everything to be all right and not to have any problems, rather than seeing that the very problems are not in something going wrong, but it's the problem is that the mind doesn't want anything to go wrong and is attaching to that. So I just this morning, someone pointed out to me that the hose had sprung a leak, and immediately it was like there wasn't any space to actually have a sense, oh right, that's exactly right, that's how it is. Hoses spring leaks, that's what they do after time. But immediately it went to like, oh, where is it leaking? Oh, it's leaking out of the attachment, the metal attachment. Someone must have driven over it. Who's to blame? And so Nick was around driving the truck. So I said, did you drive over the hose? He said, no. But I did notice that it was leaking before I drove down. I said, oh, okay. Sure you didn't drive down and hit it before? And it was just that sense of like wanting to really find a reason why something is wrong. rather than just coming from that understanding, like, well, this is what hosts do. And of course, I missed the bigger picture, which is, like, I guess if I had known that, if I had thought of the fact that today there was going to be a Donna, there was going to be several people coming, driving their cars around, and maybe now wasn't a great time to continue watering. So then I said, oh, right, that could be my own responsibility. But then it doesn't have to be blame. It can just be, well, this is just another thing to learn about. And so the mind, it just, it, you know, at least my experience of it is that it oscillates so much between that sense of wanting peace and enjoying peace, but then just falling off of that so quickly and so easily. And it's not something that we, you know, that we really need to make a problem out of. Because when we do make a problem out of it, then we compound our difficulties. We actually, I think, cause resistance in our own practice. Because if it's, you know, if we're seeing that when we have problems with our mind going this way and that, you know, towards greed or aversion or whatever it might be, if we make a problem out of that, then we're just, you know, we're just increasing our dukkha. This is like where the second or third or fourth arrow comes in. And so, in a sense, I think what we need to align ourselves with is that kind of sense that there's something, some quality around peace and calm that we want, but we keep kind of tripping over ourselves and forgetting it and losing that over and over again. And it's just very natural. It's just very normal. And so part of our process in Buddhist practice is to figure out as many skillful means as we can that will allow us to get back in touch with that very noble aspiration towards Nibbana, towards the ending of all acquisitions, the letting go of craving. And it's, you know, it's not an easy task. It's not something that, you know, it appears on the surface very, very easy. We'll just let go. People say that often, you know, we'll just let go. It's no big deal. But yet somehow it's because of our habits, our conditioning, our repeating of what we do, it can just be very difficult to do that. Very difficult to let go and remember that we have this very strong draw towards peace and non-complication. I can think about this over the past, you know, year and a half that we've experienced the pandemic. And that was, you know, I think it was quite interesting just to see how many different reactions I had, or I could see in other people, just the differences of opinions, the reasons why, and really how it reminded me of the chant we do with talking about false refuges, you know, how many false refuges we seek. And so the pandemic reminded me a lot about that because, you know, there was just so much unknown. It was really hard to understand it, but there sure was a lot of opinions about people thinking that they knew or what the right thing is. And that's still going on. And in the end, any self-righteousness around it, any kind of very strong opinion, we can feel very right about it. We can feel this is right, other people are wrong. Or we can get into a group mentality around it. I believe like these people do, or those people do. Tribalism can occur, but it's just not, it's just complicating. It's just unnecessary. And so we, you know, we do try to have a bigger picture, but we also try to see through the lens of suffering and see how it is we cause ourselves suffering with the different kind of opinions we have, the views we have, and how we're attached to them. And again, it does come down to that. It's not the actual views themselves. It's how we believe in them and hold them to be true and hold them to be permanent and attached to them. And that moves us again away from peace. So that sense of a reflection on anicca is so helpful with that. We just always know, well, I'm not sure. I'm not so sure about anything in the world. Except we can know that if we take refuge in the world, we can see that usually in our own experience. It doesn't work out. It just increases suffering. When the Buddha first realized Nibbana, that was actually what he told himself. He said, this is just too subtle. This incredible peace is too difficult to teach. And it would cause him, he thought, a lot of harm trying to teach others. And the reason was because he said that the human beings are so given to worldliness. Their interest in creating worlds for themselves, complication, really just sort of making a mess. And luckily for us, he changed his mind, he was encouraged, and he was able to teach others. And so that sense of going out into the world, being interested in all of the conditions and thinking that we can have a great impact on them or we can control them. It's amazing how many times, at least for myself, I can see it just never works out. I can try to set up a future, or I can try to set up a way that I want to be, or whatever it is. And in that creation in and of itself, it has a seed of complication, the seed of dukkha. Whereas just being with experience in and of itself as it is, there's no problem to be had. There's just stillness. And our minds can be very convincing. Say, no, this is something to really worry about. If we fall into ill health, we want to try to control that. And of course, there are things to be done. But it's the obsessive quality that can rob us of our potential for peace. So in a sense, we want to have, you know, a sort of a wider view or a wider picture. So we can see the greater implications of what it is that we're doing and how to extricate ourselves from that. And this is, you know, essentially what right effort is and why the Buddha placed that as such an important part of the practice. You know, it's essentially, you know, really knowing your own mind states. And while you're acting, while you're intending to really keep a check on that, a sense of keeping a pulse on your own intentions. and then reflecting on them, really knowing whether they're helpful or not, or if that's not really understood, then just to see the result. And again, it's amazing how something so simple can be a very difficult thing to do. So in the monastery, we have such a greater potential, I think, because we have removed so many of the distractions in our lives. And so whether one's here for 10 years or 10 days, you enter into a situation where peace is a little bit more accessible. So we're hearing a car drive down the street, but just reflecting, living in a city, there's often many, and horns, people. So something like one car might stand out here, but that's all it is. So there's a lot of gratitude we can have for also being able to be in a place like this, but it's also easy to forget, all right, this is where we can find our place of practice more easily. We can establish ground here. So I've often reflected, and we say that the Sangha is the most fertile ground for cultivation. But it's like it's establishing also like a context of the place where you are. And so, we are impacted by the worlds we live in, the places that we abide in, the people who are part of our community. And it's often something that's easy to miss. Something like living in a community right now. Just there's, it's so incredible to actually live at Abhayagiri and to have that deep sense of interest in the Buddhist teachings, in that cultivation of peace. And yet we can't just think that that's going to be it, that this kind of context will allow us to arrive. It gives a certain path or way that we can access peace more easily, but it's really our minds that in even conditions like this can get us into trouble. And so we need to keep that watch on it. So we want to try to take advantage of a wonderful situation like this, but we also want to know that there can be complacency or discontentment can arise. And we want to keep a check on that. Early on in my practice here, I just remember there was having kind of come out of the world and then becoming an Anagarika, and there was just so much dukkha. It was amazing, and it was it was incredible because there was such a change in the conditions that I was living in. It was so much easier to cultivate at the monastery, but I found it quite difficult. And that's still the same to a degree, although it's lessened. But there has been more of a sense of that appreciation for all of the good conditions we have here. But also to try to be aware that these conditions can change, and they are at the same time not a true refuge. You know, we might take refuge in our friendships here, or the fact that we have a forest, a beautiful forest to practice in, very, very nice buildings, food. But yet all of that could go away. And just like in 2017, all of a sudden the whole monastery just left, went to the city of 10,000 Buddhas. And there was a potential that a fire could have ravaged the whole monastery grounds and destroyed all the buildings. And so it's quite important, I think, to remember that our peace is always coming from within, and we can really benefit from the conditions we're in, but we can also at the same time know that within an instant they can go away. And this is all the more so for our own bodies. You know, it takes a body to experience peace. Unless you're in some other more, if you're in a different abode. But in the human realm, in this realm, we have these bodies, and without them, we can't really take advantage of the Buddhist teachings. So it's important also to note that we really can't take refuge in our own bodies at all. Even our ability to think or be mindful might be something that we could lose. Just in a moment's notice, just here in one moment and then gone the next. So ultimately, in our practice, we are trying to uproot that sense of taking refuge in any condition. And then knowing that the only true refuge we have is in that teaching of the Buddha of the potential for our release or nibbana or stillness. Or peace. So as we're working towards that, just our daily work is to continue to bring that up, that sense of stillness within the mind, that non-grasping quality. Desireless, cravingless, unattached, unformed. And when we have a sense of that stillness, then we keep trying to bring it in over and over again. to, in a sense, teach ourselves this is what we are interested in being drawn to. This is where our refuge is, where we go for harbor, for safety. So after these words for our reflection tonight.